There are some extra lamps here, so I look a little better on the video. I hope that won't distract from the screen, for the view on the screen. Is that okay? So yesterday we were looking at the definition of the entropy as a statistical measure of information content based upon the probability density function, or PDF, of a variable, and in this particular case, the variable is the gray level in the image, or the pixel value in the image. And based upon certain requirements of the measure of information, we arrived at the definition using the log of the probability. Now, there are some properties of entropy that we should be aware of and that we'll be using. One of the properties I mentioned, I did not prove it. You could derive the proof of that by taking the derivative of the expression for entropy with respect to the probability and then putting a constraint that the sum of the probability values be equal to 1. And then you will see that the entropy is maximized when all the events are equally likely, the events being the occurrence of the various gray levels. Now, there are a few more properties that we need to recognize. HP, which is this measure of information for one particular event with a probability P, is greater than or equal to 0, with HP being 0 for two conditions, when the probability is equal to 0 and when the probability is equal to 1. Now, note that HP has the product P with its log P. So it is P log P, or PL log PL. So either when P is 0 or when P is equal to 1, the result is 0. When you have a number of events, n events with probabilities P1, P2, so on, PN, then the entropy of all of them put together, H of P1, P2, so on, PN, will be less than or equal to log of N, where log of N represents the log of the number of events that we're considering, with equality only if all of the events are equally likely, PI equal to 1 over N, which is similar to what I mentioned earlier, that when you have L gray levels, the entropy PL log PL summed over all L is maximized when all of the gray levels are equally likely. The histogram is then equal to 1 over L for all gray levels. Similarly here, we have PI equal to 1 over N. All events are equally likely. Now, if there are two sources generating images F and G, now, when I say image here, we should consider it as a class of images. F is one class of images. G is another class of images. We may make some observations in each class, or we may just make one observation in a given class. So one image is a single realization of that process. So if you have a source F and a source G with PDFs PF L1 and PG L2, so in this notation, P, little p, stands for the probability density function, or PDF. The subscript F or G stands for the source, so which is the source that is generating the image data. And L1 and L2, the argument, will stand for the gray level variable, and we will treat them as being different for these two processes. And the gray levels vary between 0 and L minus 1, let's say 0 and 255 with 8 bits per image. Then the joint information, or joint entropy, HF, G, is given by this expression, which is similar to what we saw earlier, minus P log P. Except now, the P, the probability we are considering, is PFG, L1, L2. The joint occurrence of the gray level L1 in the image F and L2 in the image G. And log of that, summed over now double summation L1 and L2 over all possible values. So this is the joint entropy when you have two images that you are observing. And if the two sources are statistically independent, then PFG L1 L2 is equal to the product of the individual PDFs, PF L1 times PG L2. That is the definition of statistical independence of two processes. Their joint PDF is equal to the product of the individual PDFs. Then, joint entropy is governed by the condition HFG less than or equal to HF plus HG, that is, the total entropy, the joint entropy, is less than or equal to the sum of the two individual entropies, with equality, that is, when it is maximum, if and only if F and G are statistically independent. The IFF means if and only if F and G are statistically independent. So when two sources are independent, then the joint entropy is maximum, and that is equal to the sum of the two individual entropies. There is nothing common between the two of them. Otherwise, you have to subtract something. The conditional entropy is another measure of information that is written as FH, or rather HF given G. The vertical lines means here given G. Given that you have observed G, and then you observe F, what is the new information you are getting? And that is, now again, summation on all possible gray levels, PGL2. The probability of observing G that you have already observed, and then multiply that with PF given G. What is the probability of observing the gray level L1 in the image F, given you observed in the image G the gray level L2? So PF given G L1 L2, and the log of that. Now this will be equal to the joint probability PFG L1 L2 and the log of that. PF given G, this is the conditional probability. So here we have two types of probability. You have to pay attention to this comma or the vertical stroke. Comma indicates joint, and the vertical stroke indicates conditional probability. Then HF given G is equal to the joint information HF comma G minus HG. Because you already observed G, you must remove the information content of that. So the entropy conditional, F conditional on G, is the joint entropy, and subtract from it HG, and that amount will be less than HF. So this is another interesting notion, and we will see some applications later. The conditional PDF is defined in this manner. PF given G, L1, L2, is the joint PDF, PF, G, divided by PG, L2, the one that you have already observed, with the understanding that PG, L2 is greater than 0. Otherwise, you get a divide by 0. At the beginning, when we encountered entropy, I mentioned that that entropy is called the zeroth order entropy. Now, there are some higher order entropies that we could define. In the zeroth order entropy, we were only considering one pixel at a time, one gray level value at a time. And the assumption was that the successive pixels produced by the source are statistically independent. That is, there is a machine that is giving out pixel values or gray level values, and each one is independent of the previous pixel values generated. Now, the limit there is H max equal to K bits if you have 2 to the power of K gray levels. So if you have 8 bits per pixel, the maximum is 8. But in many practical images, the entropy is much smaller than 8. And the reason for that is the neighboring pixels are not independent of one another. When there is dependence, the information conveyed is less. than the possible maximum. And this needs to be taken into account when you measure the information content of an image. The zeroth order entropy considers each pixel value to be independent of the others, and that is not true in practice. When you are looking at an image, the neighboring values are similar. There will be change, of course, over the entire scale of the image, but within small pixel distances, such as across my face, a pixel here is similar to a pixel here and is similar to that. And when you go from here up to the hair, then there is a difference in color. So there is a difference, but in that region, again, there are similar pixels. When you come here, these pixels are all similar. So there is a certain limit on the rate of change of pixel values in a given natural image, unless the image was generated in a random manner by some mathematical process. So neighboring pixels are not independent of one another, and you need to take that into account. So it is desirable to consider sequences of pixels. And how you form the sequence is a question. Should it be horizontal or vertical or some other combination of local neighborhood pixels? That is something else, sequences. But suppose we form sequences Ln of n gray values or Ln pixels, L0, L1, L2, so on, Ln. And that is the sequence we will consider. And let P of Ln be the probability of occurrence of that sequence. Now, do you want to consider 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10? That is another question. So let us consider n values at a time. So there are many combinations now. So n is the number of neighboring or additional elements considered. We start with 0. So in nth order entropy, n neighbors are considered. Then the nth order entropy of F is defined as PLn log PLn. So the idea is the same. You take the probability, take the log of that, multiply, take the sum on all possible values of that sequence here. So all possibilities of that sequence Ln. And if you have n pixels and each pixel can take 8 values, then you have 8 to the power of n, 255 values, then you have 255 to the power of n combinations. Now that will be a many large number of combinations. So it is difficult to handle a large sequence in computational machines. If you have 2 pixels and each one can take 256 levels, then you have 256 square possibilities. And that you can handle perhaps in a machine. But 256 to the power of n, where n is 10 or 20, will create difficulties. And then there is a divide by n plus 1 for normalization. So this summation is over all possibilities of the sequences Ln with n plus 1 pixels. So this is one definition. There are a few other varieties of this definition, but this is called the nth order entropy because you are considering a sequence of n pixels. How you choose them from the image in terms of the spatial arrangement is a different question. We will leave that open for now. An important property is that Hn is a monotonically decreasing function of n. For real image sequences, the correlation between pixels will reduce as you increase the sequence and the distance from the reference point. And by taking larger and larger combinations of pixels, you are accounting for the possibility of correlation existing for larger and larger distances. And as you consider larger combinations, Ln, Hn decreases. There is 1 over n plus 1, and also the probabilities will change. And this will approach the true entropy as n tends to infinity. As n tends to infinity, the correlation will reduce to 0. In practice, n doesn't have to go very large. Beyond a small number of n pixels, the correlation will be very small. Whether it is 10 or 20 pixels, we don't know. It depends upon the image. But as n increases, the correlation between pixels will decrease. As n increases, you are considering the possibility of correlation existing between these pixels, and you are accounting for that interdependence in the probability function here. And by using the higher order entropy and accounting for that correlation, you will approach the estimate of the true entropy of the image as you increase n. In practice, we only use zeroth order entropy commonly, but in image data compression, it is quite common to consider higher order entropies, 2, 3, 4, maybe 10. Beyond that, there could be some computational difficulties. If you are interested in this topic further, I would ask you to refer to the chapter on data compression. Again, we will not have the time to go into that chapter in this course. I was asked earlier this morning, Asta was asking me if there was any plan to give another course on the remainder of the book. In this course, we will go up to chapter 6, and we will skip some parts in between because we only have 36, 37 hours. I don't have any particular plans for another course on the remaining part of the book, but it depends upon your interest, and if Professor Madhumi Wu has interest in organizing another course next year, we could possibly do that. I have the material, not in this format, but that could be done. One more measure of information is called mutual information. Now, there are some particular applications of image processing, image transmission, and so on, where specific notions of entropy and information content are useful and appropriate. Mutual information is important in the analysis of transmission of images. Suppose you are transmitting an image from here to Tampere via some communication channel, maybe a satellite or maybe some line. So you transmit an image F, and on the other side, G is observed. There is some loss in transmission. Now, there are some systems where you can assume that there is no loss. There is some checking, and then if there are some errors in certain transmission, to the extent that the system can recognize the error, then there is some retransmission. But let's assume that there is some loss. IF given G is mutual information between F and G, is HF plus HG minus HF comma G. That is, it is the sum of the entropy of F and the entropy of G minus HF comma G, the joint entropy. And that is equal to HF minus HF given G, or HG minus HG given F. So you have to subtract this conditional entropy from the entropy of the first image. That represents the information that is received or retrieved from a system. The interpretation is this: HF is the information input to the transmission or archival system. Suppose you store images somewhere, and then after some time you go and retrieve it. You put in F, and when you go and ask for it back, you get G. Something has gone wrong. So how do you measure that? Then HF given G is the information about F, given that the received or retrieved image G has been observed. Sometimes there could be something wrong. You send something and you get something else. And it has happened to me in real life. I once sent a nice calendar from Canada to my parents in India by mail. Now, in international mailing, sometimes things go wrong, either intentionally on part of somebody or something goes wrong. In this case, somebody took that calendar away from my package and put something else in. So my parents got this magazine, and they then wrote a letter to me and said, "Why did you send this magazine to me or to us?" And then I told them, "No, I didn't send you that magazine. Whatever that magazine is, I sent you a nice calendar." So somebody has opened the package. There is some pilfering in the mail system. There is some theft that happens. Somebody took that and replaced something else. So I sent F, they got G. And the information conveyed, of course, is this quantity, HF minus HF given G. So what happens? If G is completely correlated with F, HF given G is zero. If they are completely the same, then if you have observed G and then you observe F, there is nothing new. So that is zero. So IF given G is just HF. So that is what is intended. That is correct. There is no loss or distortion in image transmission. But if G is independent of F, you send something and they get something else, or you put something in the image archival system, and then after some time you go and ask for that case, but due to some error, you get something completely different that is uncorrelated or independent, then HF given G is HF. So when you have observed G and then you observed F, and F is completely new, it means you have got the full information about F, which is HF. And because of that expression, HF minus HF given G, then IF given G is zero. So if G is independent of F, the mutual information is zero. There is complete loss of information in transmission or archival retrieval. Not just archival, it is archival and retrieval. Now there are archival systems now based on digital data. Previously, films in hospitals used to be stored, and records and bank data, bank documents were stored physically somewhere. But nowadays it's all done using digital scanned images of the documents. When you write a check, even checks are not being written anymore, but suppose you write a check, then the bank will scan it and save it somewhere. And if you ask for proof of that check, they will send you the scanned image. Previously, it used to be the physical document. So when you store something and retrieve, and if there is something wrong in the retrieval process and the wrong document is received, this could happen. There is total loss of information. So entropy and mutual information are useful in the design and analysis of image archival coding and transmission and communication systems. As to what is the information content of an image, what is the channel capacity required to transmit the image, and what should be the storage requirement to store the image without any loss, and if you're transmitting and something goes wrong, what is the loss of information? Okay? If you're interested in more details and applications of these topics, I would ask you to read the chapter on image coding. Now let's take a look at blur and spread functions. There are several components in an image acquisition system that could cause blurring due to intrinsic and practical limitations. Intrinsic limitations are due to the design of the system or due to certain components in the system, such as the collimator in a SPECT machine, such as the target focal spot size in an X-ray source. Those are inherent or intrinsic. And then there are practical limitations that may impose further conditions and lead to blurring. The simplest visualization of blurring is provided by using a single ideal point to represent the object. Suppose there is an ideal point source or an impulse source. What is the image that you get if you were to capture that using your system? And that is called the point spread function or the blur function. So here is a digital representation. This is one pixel approximating an ideal impulse. And this is a modeled point spread function with a Gaussian blur function. So if your lens is not focused properly, let's say, in your camera, if you take a picture of an ideal point source, which could be a light source that is at a very large distance, at infinity practically, and if you get a function like that, or if you get an image like that, then that represents the point spread function or impulse response of your system. Ideally, you would like to see a single point, but in practice, you will not get that. So mathematically, an ideal point is represented by the unit impulse function or the Dirac delta function, delta xy. And this is undefined at the argument being zero and is zero at all other locations with the condition that the net integral is equal to 1. So this is the definition of the Dirac delta function that you must have seen in signal processing for one-dimensional case. Here we just have two dimensions, function of x and y. The 1D Dirac delta function that you are familiar with, you would have seen delta t, but let's write as delta x. And it is defined in a few different ways. One is in terms of its action within an integral as the sifting property, where if you take a function f of x, multiply it with a delta at x equal to x naught, and integrate over a range a to b where the location x naught is between a and b, then the value is fx naught, the value of the function fx at x equal to x naught. So what that says is the delta function will extract or sift the value of the function f at x naught, which is the position of the impulse. So this is called the sifting property. Now you could generalize that and then say fx for any x is given by f alpha delta x minus alpha d alpha. Then you are resolving the signal fx into a weighted combination of delta functions. So f alpha is the weight at x equal to alpha, and delta x minus alpha is a delta function at alpha equal to x. The integral is on alpha, the output is fx. So a continuous signal may be seen as the summation or integral of a number of delta functions. The value of each delta function is equal to the value of the signal at that point. A discrete signal is also made up of a discrete combination of impulse functions. But you could say that for a continuous function also in this manner. So the integral of the delta function must be equal to 1, and it is undefined at the value, at the argument being equal to 0, and it is 0 otherwise. This is in the continuous case. If x is discrete, you can write here 1 when the argument is 0. That is the discrete delta function. It's also called the Kronecker delta function, but this is the Dirac delta function. So the delta function is also defined in a few different ways. One is as a limit epsilon tending to 0 of an exponential function, exponential minus absolute of x divided by epsilon. Now there are a few other definitions. One other definition is to use a rectangular pulse. A rectangular pulse of width, let's say A, and height equal to 1 over A, so that the area under the curve is equal to 1. And then as you reduce A, as you reduce the width, the value has to go up because the integral has to be equal to 1. And in the limit, as the width tends to 0, the value tends to infinity, with the condition that the area under the curve be equal to 1, you get the delta function. It's the same here with an exponential function, where the width of the exponential function is reduced to 0. So when you have an impulse source, the image obtained when the input to a system, an imaging system or image processing system, is a point source or an impulse function is known as the impulse response or the point spread function of the system, PSF. So the point spread function is the output when the input is equal to a point, or in this case, the impulse. Now, if you were to assume that the imaging system is linear and also shift invariant, and we'll call that LSI, linear shift invariant system. In the time domain, you would have seen it as linear time invariant. So here, instead of time, we have shift or space invariant. So it means the imaging system will produce the same output whether the camera is here or there, or the input is here or there, shifted in space. The result is the same except for a shift in coordinates. Then the system is shift invariant, or position invariant, or space invariant. The image GXY, that is the output, for the input FXY, is given by the convolution integral. You have seen this in one dimension. Here in 2D, GXY is the convolution of F, now written as alpha beta, where alpha and beta are temporary variables of integration, HX minus alpha Y minus beta. Convolution will require one of them to be reversed with respect to the variables of integration, H minus alpha minus beta. So there is a reversal of the function, and then shifting X minus alpha Y minus beta, or minus alpha plus X minus beta plus Y. So you reverse one of the functions and then shift by X and Y, multiply the two, integrate, and then you get the output for that position XY, GXY. This integral is also equal by change of variables. You can get this to be integral of H alpha beta FX minus alpha Y minus beta. And that is written as HXY star FXY. Now in some books you may see double star to indicate two-dimensional convolution, or a star within a circle to say two-dimensional convolution, but we will just put one star. And that means convolution in how many ever dimensions that these signals have. Okay? Now you have seen convolution in 1D, so this is in 2D. We will see some properties later. Some of the causes of blurring in imaging systems are the focal spot in an X-ray machine, the thickness of the screen or crystal in the detection of X-rays or gamma rays, and scattering. Scattering typically causes noise. If this is the path and the scattered ray goes somewhere else, that is noise. But if this is the path and the scattered photons come very close and near the original point of the original beam, then that could be interpreted to be blurring. So scattering could cause some blurring. So if you were to consider an ideal point source that is on the target of the X-ray tube, where you have the electron beam that comes and hits the tube, if this electron beam is infinitely thin and X-rays emanate from an ideal point, then you have an ideal point source with no dimension, no physical dimension. Then the shadow of an object here, that is called the umbra, will be a sharp shadow. Let's suppose that this is light, an ideal point source, and this is an object. It'll cast a shadow. And this is the umbra, and that'll be a sharp shadow. This is a point, an ideal point source. But in practice, you will not have an ideal point source. You may have a source like this, which will be of a certain finite thickness. And when a source of a finite area generates light or X-rays, and those X-rays or light affect an object, and the object casts a shadow, you will not get this ideal shadow, the umbra, but in addition, you get extended lighter shadows called the penumbra, which is the blur. So if you have a source of finite area, you can imagine many point sources, an infinite number of point sources within that area, and for each point source, there is a shadow. And the superposition of all of these shadows from all of these point sources is the image that you obtain. And within that is the true umbra, which is this, but then there are also extensions on all sides, which is the penumbra. So this represents blurring due to the finite area of the focal spot size or the source of light or X-rays.